We've heard a lot this year about the First World War, 100 years since it ended. And it's interesting to imagine a conversation between soldiers then and soldiers now. Would they have much in common? In 2013, I spoke with three writers about what we expect of the modern soldier. The discussion focused on Afghanistan, our longest war. The first Australian troops were committed in 2001 and the last combat troops left in 2013, 3 months after this conversation. On the panel at the Brisbane Writers' Festival, a former commander of Australian forces in Afghanistan, retired Major General John Cantwell. Margaret Everson, clinical psychologist and mother of a British officer killed in Helmand Province, Afghanistan. And journalist Chris Masters, who had been embedded with Australian forces. Chris, after several visits to Afghanistan, you came away deeply impressed by the Australian soldiers there. Specifically, what was it that left an impression on you?
I got to know them close enough to sleep in the same barracks and go out on patrol and grieve with them when the person who was sleeping beside me didn't come back. And of course, so I suppose I'd have to admit I lost some objectivity along the way, because in wanting to get as close to them as you need to get to tell an accurate story, you have to put objectivity to one side, and also, of course, you're dependent on them for your safety and security. But for all that, I'm an experienced journalist, and I was prepared to report the failures as well as whatever I admired. I think it was the humanitarian role that they played that struck me most of all. I mean, they do fight with one arm behind their back, because as a developed nation, we operate to rules of war, strict rules of engagement that the other side exploit. So there's intense provocation. But I always admired, not just in Afghanistan, but in Timor and other places, that the way the Australians were restrained. It didn't seem to me that they were gung-ho at all, that they saw themselves as warriors out there to kill. Quite the opposite. You know, they were there to protect lives. And that was, of course, the role in the valleys of Uruzgan. They were there as a kind of a beat cop, but not just going out and exposing themselves to IED strikes and sniper attacks, etc., and essentially having to be enormously restrained about shooting back. They were also building schools and roads, as you point out, and clinics, and doing what the aid agencies couldn't do. And I think we have a bit of trouble getting our head around the notion of a soldier as a kind of a welfare provider. I think we'd be enormously proud of somebody from Care Australia taking a risk in an environment like that. But we don't think of the soldier in much that way. Whereas I know from talking to a great many of them, that's where they got their satisfaction from knowing they were there to do a lot of good. And I think that story was a hard story to tell for the reasons I've mentioned, but also because when we're reporting on war, we expect to be reporting on the sob and clubbing of the gunfire and the horror and the mayhem, and the media saw very little of that. So a central objective of the mission, which was this non-kinetic work, was very poorly covered. And the other side of it, the conventional battle, and there's a lot of that, and it's very fierce, we were never allowed to get close enough to that, or for that matter, to really know the enemy and know what the strategic objectives were to be able to report that side of it as well.
Is that why, Chris, civilian Australia tends to have the wrong idea, the wrong impression of our diggers, or is it also because there is so much focus on A, what goes wrong on the battlefield, and B, what goes wrong back at home with some of the scandals and indiscretions that get the front page reporting?
Yes, I think it's right for us to report the scandals, but you know, you'd always hope for a bit of context as well. And indeed, for all the talk about the character of the Australian digger and whatever emerges after the latest ADFA scandal, I have to say, I came away with the opposite impression. I didn't actually think, I mean, obviously there's a cultural problem at one level, there's rank misogyny, you know, but I'm not surprised about that either, because it's a 90% male organisation. But look at the culture of the soldiers serving abroad man or woman, and I'd say I'd be surprised if you weren't impressed.
John Campbell, do you think Australians have an outdated idea of the Australian soldier, one informed more by the past than by the present?
Look, I think that's reasonable. We have this Anzac mythology, this Anzac spirit, which is in many ways packaged and
romanticised
and overstated in some ways. I wouldn't for a moment diminish the Anzac heritage that career was built upon and so many others. It's an extraordinarily rich and powerful shaping influence on our society and on our history as a young nation. But we do overcook it a little bit. You know, not everyone who has served under the colours has been the most wonderful soldier ever gifted to a battlefield. And Australians sometimes think that there's this gleaming bronzed Anzac image against which mere mortals like me and the soldiers that have had the privilege to command, you know, don't look so wonderful. The truth is that Australians have been Australians since we first put on a slouch hat, and they're very much the same. Okay, mm-hmm. They don't have a Twitter account in the First World War, and the modern soldier doesn't look to Queen and Country for his inspiration, but they are still the same person. And that sort of slightly stylized impression of what makes an Australian soldier does inform the general impression of what soldiery and military operations and people is about.
I read a quote by you that said, there is something about the Australian character that is suited to the things soldiers are asked to do. How so?
I had that conversation with Chris when he was researching his book, and I believe it's true. There is something remarkable about Australians. Now, I've served with British soldiers in peace and war. I've served with Americans in peace and war. And I've had a lot to do with colleagues in our region from other countries. But there is something about the Australian soldier that is well suited to the ambiguous and complex and slightly messy environment in which we throw them. Now, I hasten to say that I think the Brits are pretty much the same. But there is something special about the way Australians do it. And it's something in the water that is bred into them somehow. Our people have this remarkable ability, despite often quite youthful years, 20-ish, many of the young diggers, and yet they have this ability to grasp the fact that it's not a straight-out shooting match, as Chris was just telling us, that it is about trying to work within a population which has very different cultural values, very different understanding of what warfare actually means, and very different expectations of how people can act in a war. And yet these young guys and girls, they get it, and they don't have to be clubbed to understand it. They just somehow understand it. And yet when the moment is on them to fight, they fight like demons and do it extremely well and do it with great precision and with discretion. There's very, very little of the sort of wanton, throwing about of violence that we see in some other armies and in many, unfortunate situations. So there is something terrific about the Australian character. It's part of our egalitarian approach, I think. It's a part of our willingness to accept new people and generally accept new ideas and understand that we are citizens of a broader community than just our own little circle.
Margaret, I want to bring you into the discussion. I wonder, you write about the tragedy of losing a son to war, and we'll talk a little about that later on, and you write about the many big questions that you want answered by the Ministry of Defence and so on. What do you make, as someone who's gone through that and is clearly still dealing with that, what do you make of all of this talk about how impressive our young soldiers are? And, we can certainly, I suppose, extend that to young British soldiers.
Well, I've always been fascinated by, if you like, the roots of the Anzac traditions. So it was 1914, and the British were mean enough to send, Australian soldiers into a very nasty situation at a time when the government was wanting to pull away from Britain. So it was politically expedient to make an issue of the bravery of the Australian soldiers who were being pushed into a situation which was effectively impossible by their commanding forces in the UK, and therefore it would be a good idea for Australian politicians to pull away from Great Britain. That was really what it was all about at the time, wasn't it? Mm. And I find that absolutely fascinating because it's, you know, it's become an important part of the Australian history. And I think it represents independence in a way, independence from an authority that didn't have their best interests at heart. And so that's the tradition. As far as the calibre of the soldiers, I can't really comment on that because I haven't obviously had a lot to do with Australian soldiers. I've had a lot to do with British soldiers.
And is what Chris and John is telling us about the calibre of Australian soldiers, did you see that reflected in your son's comrades, for example?
Well, Mark was half Australian, so I am Australian. Yeah. He's half Australian. Okay. And his
well, he's at an advantage to start with then.
Yes, he's got some good, tough genes. Yeah. And, you know, he probably had everything in him that you're talking about. Mm. He was a hugely brave, determined, free-thinking, lovely guy. Mm. And had a lot of us... You know, you could really see his strength. He was very easygoing and at the same time was able to sort of snap into being tough and hard and strategic. So he sort of was both sides.
It's what you think of the Australian soldier. You know, that's the stereotype that you conjure up, the laconic on the one hand, but the fiercely focused when you need to be on the other hand.
He was a wonderful soldier, so I've heard. You know, the Welsh Guards valued him hugely. And it's very interesting, really, why he decided to join up with the Welsh Guards, because he was, in the end, a rugby player and a musician. He played the cello and the piano and loved singing. And also absolutely charming. So he would have me falling apart with laughter with his stories.
Chris, you write about Corporal Dan in your book, a particularly good example, I think, of the modern soldier. You examine two incidents that he's involved in 4 years apart, 2007, 2011. Maybe you could just briefly talk about Corporal Dan and the impression he made on you.
Yes, well, I think it's ironic that perhaps what is central to what is special about Australian soldiers is born of civil society more than the military indoctrination. I mean, they're trained well and they're led well, but it's the values that they bring to the uniform, which is just simple decency, the fair go, hate the idea of these powerless people being persecuted, that I think makes them valuable in that peacekeeping role. Corporal Dan is like that, and I start that chapter by saying if you saw him on a bus, he wouldn't look 10 foot tall and bulletproof. You know, he's reasonably fit, but I think he kind of looked more like somebody who worked in IT than a soldier, and you will see that a lot. They do not fit this conventional Anzac stereotype. They're all over the place. They weren't the tallest soldiers in Afghanistan. The Dutch stood head and shoulders above them, but they had a terrific attitude. And I liked Dan because he was a thinking soldier. They talk about white space, understanding white space initiatives, that is sort of recognizing that if you are too tough and too belligerent and undiscriminating in your use of force, you will create a bigger enemy. Dan was not only good at that, but he was actually also really good at the fighting, but again, I was impressed. One, I have to say, I was impressed because he actually spoke to me. Mm. Normally, they don't open up, but every now and then, if you're really persistent, you'll find somebody who, I suppose, is self-confident enough to feel that their mates won't chide them too much if they talk to this reporter. And he gave me some specific incidents of combat where I thought he was also doing what soldiers are there to kill. You know, we tend to try to sanitize this reality. All of us, I think, not just the soldiers, but the rest of us. It's an uncomfortable subject to broach. But he was pretty good at that too, but good at it in a way that you have to say, if you're going to be impressed by somebody who's a good killer, then you'd rather be impressed by somebody who actually didn't like it, saw that it was their professional duty. And after all, if he didn't kill, he'd be killed. Mm. So he was caught up in some pretty intense combat. And I was impressed with the way that he thought he managed to outthink the enemy. I thought also, when I did speak to him about these indelicate subjects, I was pleased that he didn't boast about what he was doing. There was no body count or anything like that.
It strikes me that this conversation that we're having now about the calibre of our soldiers is a very rare and unusual conversation to have in Australia. There may well be people who hear this on the radio who write in and complain that, you know, we are glamorising Australian soldiers. Any thoughts, John, as to why it is the case that we rarely, I mean, I'm sure within military circles, people are used to praising courageous behaviour and so forth, but we're not, in a sense, like the Americans. We don't talk about, especially our modern soldiers, in such glowing terms. Why have the public really not got an understanding as nuanced, perhaps, as the one we're discussing now?
It's an interesting topic. The understanding of what our military people, and I'm broadening that to include Navy and Air Force, do is quite poor in Australia. And there's a whole bunch of reasons for that. A very tiny slice of Australian society has any engagement in the military, have any family connections or even personal experience of it, contrasting that back to, you know, earlier generations. And when one does the numbers, for example, say in 1945, at the end of the Second World War, fully two-thirds of adult males in Australia had military experience. Two-thirds. And that profoundly shaped their attitudes and the attitudes of most of society. Nowadays, you'd be lucky to find, you know, 2% of the Australian population having any exposure. And so that's a difference. Most Australians don't understand it, have other interests, other concerns, quite legitimately, and therefore they are disengaged and they don't really have much of an idea of what our military forces do, except when they read the latest scandal in the daily papers, which regrettably shapes opinions, and it shapes it in a very negative way, in many cases quite unfairly. And that's not for one moment to defend the ghastly behaviour of some idiots who are in uniform, in the same way that there's no excuse for the idiots in the Coles warehouse or the apprentice's workshop down the road, the ABC, or any other institution. Australia, unfortunately, like every society, is populated with a fair percentage of people you wouldn't want to have around for a barbecue and who have totally inappropriate ideas about gender and race and individual rights. Well, defence has those. Unfortunately, the broad perception of the many, many people, like the ones that Chris has met and the wonderful soldiers that Margaret's met in doing her research into her son Mark's death, those are ignored. They are largely characterised by the poor behaviours or occasionally the wonderful behaviours of a few. Most of them are the most ordinary Australians you could wish to meet. They are just like the kid that you see flipping burgers in McDonald's or your teenage son who goes off to secondary school or uni. They're just like them. And so we shouldn't expect too much or too little of them.
Retired Major General John Cantwell, a former commander of the Australian Forces in Afghanistan. There's a link on the Big Ideas webpage to the full discussion, The Modern Soldier. And remember that all Big Ideas are available for download from our webpage or from the ABC Listen app. That's a wrap for this show. I'm Paul Barclay. Bye for now.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.